And we're back. It's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And we will be speaking shortly. As a matter of fact, wait a minute. I think we've got Steve Gowans already. Are you there, Stephen?
I'm here. How are you?
Very good. The title of your piece that we would like to talk to you about is "The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, Nor Will It Be Brought to You by Russell Banks, Oliver Stone, or Noam Chomsky." And, well, you've really picked yourself a nice fight here. I want to just, before I ask you, I mentioned this all seemed to begin rather with a lot of fun. I must say you're kind of spoiling the fireworks and humor by being making all these people be serious. It all started with Russell Brand had quite a striking interview with the BBC sort of stuffed shirt, which people notice, you know, the clash with the stuffed shirt. And he ended up saying, well, I don't think we should vote, and because there's no point, because it's places run by wealthy people who don't care about us. And then he also, then he got sort of provoked into, well, what are you for? And he, somewhere along the line, he did mention the word revolution, and which he said he believed in. And then he said he also believed, I think he said socialism somewhere along the line. That, I guess, led to the New Statesman thinking it for a lark and maybe to sell a lot of papers to give Russell one day as an editor to present his point of view. But the rollout, kind of like Obama's rollout, left a lot of people dissatisfied. And I guess you would be way up on the list of those who weren't satisfied. We'll start with where you started your first paragraph. You said that in discussing this, you said that the National Post, when we had street demonstrations here against the G7, which got pretty lively and involved, you know, thousands and thousands of people, the National Post suddenly decided it might be a good time for these people who are uncomfortable with the way things are run, that they should all go and maybe join the NDP. And you said, that's kind of surprising. But there's a there's method in their madness. So I'll start you there. What did that episode teach you or show you?
It was very surprising that the National Post should... Actually, they were encouraging young people to participate in NDP politics and to become candidates for NDP. It was just certainly an odd thing for the National Post to be recommending. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if for wealthy people, or the wealthy, as the National Post certainly represents a kind of conservative, wealthy constituency, you want politics confined to an electoral arena, because that's the kind of arena you can dominate. You don't want politics on the street, because street politics are unpredictable and dangerous. Mm-hmm. So what they were doing was encouraging people who are taking to the street to express their dissatisfaction with politics, to instead move their protests and their politics to the electoral arena in which the wealthy and the well-to-do could dominate. Mm-hmm. And these people, if they got involved in electoral politics, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with electoral politics, but if you do devote all of your time and energy and resources to electoral politics, you'll discover that you're soon bogged down in kind of the minutiae of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that exactly is what the National Post wanted to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it seems to me you've done something very, very helpful. And of course, I was kidding in the sense that, obviously, it seems to me the Russell Brand phenomenon, which is quite enjoyable to if you're just watching Russell kid around or make fun of a BBC stuffed shirt who says to him, well, why don't you run for office and stop talking all these radical things? In a way, New Statesman kind of put Russell... they gave him an opportunity before I think one could think that he was ready for this kind of a match. Because as you point out, now you have to get down to brass tacks. What would you do? And you ran down a list of people that he chose, a man named Judd Apatow, uh-huh. who says that we should make fun of authority figures.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, let's start with that. I mean, he says that comedy is revolution.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, I should say that I really did like the interview that Russell Brand did with Jeremy Paxman. I thought it was great. And then I read what Russell Brand wrote in the New Statesman, and I thought, you know, this is kind of silly and pretty lightweight, and it doesn't say much of anything. And then someone sent me an article from the Russell Brand-edited New Statesman that says, what does revolution mean to you? Where Brand had gathered a bunch of high-profile people and asked them about what revolution was. And as you read through all of this, it became clear that the entire purpose of this New Statesman edition was to use a discussion about revolution to criticize and denounce and denigrate real revolutions, to tar the reputation of real revolutionaries, and then to present a bunch of silly ideas about what revolution is. So kind of to redefine revolution, and in fact, really, to destroy the idea of revolution altogether. And the connection for me between that and what the National Post was doing was, you know, and as you pointed out, Brand certainly, unlike the National Post, wasn't recommending that people become involved in electoral politics. In fact, he was denouncing voting.
Yeah, he seems to be permanently alienated. That you have to bless his heart. He doesn't. He's not going to buy in. he may jump ship, but that seems to be what irritated them most about him, right, is that he won't lead people into the little rat's maze that they have created to drive you crazy.
Right, but on the other hand, what he was doing was he's kind of defining legitimate political change within parameters that were favorable to the established order, or at least those that he assembled were. Because as you pointed out, you look at what does revolution mean to you, Judd Apatow saying, it means, you know, telling authority figures to fuck off. You know, that's revolution. Or Deepak Chopra, who says, oh, politics are irrelevant. He puts his trust in inner revolution. And then there was a comedian who said, well, you know, revolution, I'm really looking at a revolution in our ideas. And then the silliest one of all was, it started off promising. It was Howard Marks, an author. So he
spells that with a K, yes.
With a K, yeah. So he said, you know, he'd like to see a revolution along the lines of the the Marxist notions of transferring power from reactionary to progressive classes. Well, now he's getting close to some, you know, an orthodox.
That's radioactive.
Yeah. But then it quickly becomes ridiculous. And he expresses the hope that, you know, you could have a revolution and that this would immediately lead to a utopia. And his idea of utopia is a society in which we can all smoke dope, love each other, and never fight. And then he starts talking about...
I lived there, yes.
Well, he starts talking about his model, which is someplace in the Kalash Valley in northern Pakistan, where he says, you know, there's wine drinking and dancing. And
I thought that was Vallejo. No, not Vallejo. Pardon me. Napa Valley.
I mean, this was just ridiculous. I mean, there are no prisons, no laws, no police, no vested interest, and people spend all day drinking wine and smoking dope. So.
By the way, Stephen, don't you get the impression that each of these people he asked to tell what their vision was, were thinking of their own narrow personal audience. So who likes them? For example, this guy says, well, maybe we should think about, you know, transferring power and wealth to the poor. He realizes immediately, well, that's not going to go over with my fans, so I better get this thing into drugs and dancing.
Right. Well, then there was Tim Street. So he's the director of UK Uncut Legal Action. So, and he said, you know, something that will resonate with a lot of people on the left, that democracy is the most revolutionary idea. He says that what we should do, a revolution is a kind of state where the corporate ruling class remains in place, hence really no revolution at all, but where we try and hold corporations in check. So he says you have to stop corporations from putting people and profits before people, which is kind of a silly idea. I mean, what corporation doesn't put profits before people? By yes. definition, that's what they do. They put profits before people.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can...
Telling the leopard to change his spots, yes.
Well, exactly. So, I mean, that's kind of a quixotic project. And then he'd had this newspaper owner, Evgeny Lebedev, and this becomes kind of interesting. At least he knew what a revolution was. And he started looking at the American and the French and the Russian revolution.
Yes.
And said, well, you know, the American Revolution, that was a pretty good revolution. Yes. The French...
They got to keep their slaves, everything, you know, not too bad.
But the Bolshevik Revolution, well, he said that was the worst thing that ever happened. And mentioned that it showed, quote, that Marx's method was incompatible with freedom and dignity. And that was kind of where this entire, you know, edition of the New Statesman was going.
Because
mm-hmm. then they get to Oliver Stone and Peter Kuznick.
Yes. Oh, by the way, before you mention them, I want to make sure I say this is Stephen Gowans, and it's gowans.wordpress.com. The revolution will not be televised, etc. And, of course, this is CIUT 89.5 FM, the Taylor Report. And, yes, you pushed Oliver Stone back out into the stream so we have a good, fresh look at him. these people, Stephen, one of the things you did, it seems to me very important. We have so many leaders who people do look to them. I remember Bertrand Russell, and people would look to them. And the big problem always is, well, what would he have us do? I mean, he doesn't like the way the imperialists operate. He doesn't like colonialism, doesn't like exploitation. And so what would he have us do? And then, boy, it's shocking, your treatment of Oliver Stone. Please proceed.
Yeah, well,
shocking. I was shocked.
He and Kuznick, of course, have put together this documentary, The Untold History of the United States, which has an accompanying book.
Mm-hmm.
And the first I came upon Peter Kuznick was an interview I saw with him about the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And it was supposed to be favorable to the Soviet Union, but he began by talking about how terrible Joseph Stalin was.
Mm-hmm.
And the Stone and Kuznick approach to the question, you know, what does revolution mean to you, begins this way. It begins with, fuck Stalin, Mao, and the Kim.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on here?
Yeah. What makes this man talk like the mayor of Toronto? I don't understand. They mistake cursing for sincerity, don't they? Or they think that that's the foundation of a real serious guy. He swears like this.
Well,
and it's in a revolting way, not revolutionary way. Go ahead.
Right. I mean, why did they say that? So you start, for some reason, they have a problem with those guys. So, I mean, you could have problems with them in various ways, but they go on to suggest that the problem with Kim, Mao, and Stalin is that they were power hungry,
mm-hmm.
subverted their revolutions. They were about Stalin, Mao, and Kim. That's all they cared about. All they cared about was accumulating power and aggrandizing themselves and using their position at the head of a revolution to make life better for them, and that their revolutions essentially had failed, which is a complete misrepresentation of what had gone on. And, you know, I said that their untold history of the United States should really be retitled The Untold History of the United States by two confused leftists who have yet to be told the untold history of Russia, China, and Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they said the things they said about Kim, Mao, and Stalin, they didn't really know what was going on in those countries. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kim, for example, everyone likes to ridicule the Kims because, you know, Kim mm-hmm. Il-sung, Kim Jong-un, Kim Jong-il, you can make fun of them, but
yes.
Kim Il-sung was an effective guerrilla leader who made an enormous contribution to the liberation of Korea from Japanese rule.
He was the principal leader at
yes.
that time. And by the way, no one ever mentions he was our ally in defeating fascism and Japanese imperialism.
Yeah, no one makes fun, for example, of the current president of South Korea, President Park, who's the daughter of the military dictator, the previous president of South Korea, President Park, who was in the Japanese Imperial Army hunting down Kim and his guerrillas.
Mm-hmm.
But to say that Kim's revolution failed is ludicrous.
By the way, you make the further point that he made his country into a colony. The United States has something 30,000 to 40,000 troops. And didn't you tell us in this program that the authority to the movement of the South Korean troops is held by American officers?
Yeah, I mean, the United States has war...
That's a colony.
Yeah, wartime command over South Korean military. Interestingly, just recently, the head of South Korean military intelligence said that in a one-to-one fight between South Korea and North Korea, that the South would lose. Mm-hmm. Which has created kind of a scandal in South Korea because they say, what? We spend $30 billion a year on our military, and North Koreans spend less than $1 billion. So how could that be?
Well, it may be that the guys in the South are only interested in greed and self-promotion. You take them into other territory as well. You point out that... Oliver Stone has a little bit of a problem. He has sort of attached himself to Fidel and the Cuban Revolution, and he wants to pretend that it's not a part of the family. Fidel never pretended he was not part of the family. And one of the most painful episodes in Cuban history was when they lost their ties with the Soviet Union, right?
Yeah, if you look closer at what problem that Stone and Kuznick have with Mao, Kim, and Stalin is that they led this kind of hierarchical, but they had kind of Leninist revolutions where they had discipline and organization and hierarchy. And I mean, Stone comes from this kind of 1960s anarchist new left tradition, which has some problems with hierarchy and the Leninist approach, kind mm-hmm. of like Noam Chomsky.
I remember an expression, participatory democracy.
Right. But
none of us ever managed to make work somehow.
For some reason, they don't like to criticize Fidel Castro, and I'm not exactly sure why, because, I mean, the Cuban Revolution, like Mao's revolution and Kim's revolution, was guerrilla-led. Like Mao's revolution and Kim's revolution, the Cuban Revolution was assisted by the Soviet Union. And really, the Cuban society is based on the, quote, Stalinist model to a large extent. So I'm not sure why he has problems with Stalin, Mao, and Kim, but not Castro. Mm-hmm. The other interesting thing...
By the way, he doesn't mention Ho Chi Minh, which is interesting, because there's another figure which is sort of gets a pass... And unhelpful not to broaden that discussion and say there were struggles against colonialism led by these people who were Marxists, Leninists, revolutionaries, organized, disciplined, had a program. It was all spelled out and actually achieved something. And a lot of these people like having their picture standing next to them, but later they talk about those ideas like they're contemptible.
Yes.
Which is a fairly contemptible thing to do.
Then equally contemptible, I find. You see, the Stone's problem is, well, he says that what he wants is a world without militarism, imperialism, and exploitation, where there is creativity, kindness, and generosity, and there's no greed and lust for power. Okay, but if you just look at the militarism, imperialism, and exploitation part, you could ask the question, why is it that Oliver Stone supported Barack Obama in the last two elections? I mean, he says...
Commander-in-chief of something, as I recall.
Yeah, Stalin, Mao...
Drone captain.
Right, and Stalin, Mao, and Kim actually did... I mean, they took on imperialism and militarism, and they did something about it. Obama was certainly on the different side of imperialism and militarism that Stone claims to be on, and yet he's still supporting him. Mm-hmm. And this has been something that Michael Parente has pointed out. For a long time, these kind of anti-communist leftists who have denounced, you know, the Soviet Union and Mao and Kim have nevertheless been ardent supporters of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, they're the ones who moan for 3.5 years about how bad everything is, and then in the 6 months they give themselves the right to go and be on platforms trying to reelect one of them. Obama or Clinton or whomever.
Yes, and ignoring all the crimes of the Democratic Party or of presidents who are part of our Democratic presidents, while at the same time pointing to the crimes of communism.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, I mean, this is so important. You make the point that there is this ahistorical approach, and I mean, frankly, to my mind, it's labeling. You put a name on something, and then there's no further discussion is possible. But under the leadership of the Chinese Communist Party, and Mao was the leader of that party, but it was a party, and it had millions of people involved, they defeated the Japanese, they removed colonial power over their country for the first time in, a century, and then put it on a path of development, which every capital of the world now says, hey, wow, that's development. And then they say, well, they must be pretty bad guys.
And the revolution.
You say, am I in a dream or something? Who just said that?
Well, I know. I mean, and then they say the revolution failed. Well, yeah. Did Mao not overturn centuries of feudalism and power domination?
Yeah. Could we bring in gender? I mean, the Bolsheviks were the ones who said women are equal with men. That's end of subject. They have full rights as anybody else. And at that time, the women of the West could not vote. And I think you make the point, and this is kind of important, the challenge of the Soviet Union caused a lot of reform in the West, and that's only just now being recognized, is that they were trying to compete with a dangerous rival.
Yeah. And the Italian philosopher Domenico Lussordo, I mean, he has a really interesting approach to this. He says, all these people talking about this failure, you know, the failure of the revolution, it was a failed revolution. So he said, if it's a failed revolution, how did they manage to make such an enormous contribution to, first, the emancipation of colonial people, and they did, and in the West, to the development or the emergence of the welfare state in competition with the Soviet Union?
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes on to say, you know, and here's Stone talking about Stalin as a defiler of the noble concept of revolution. Well, Lussordo is saying, you know, if you had a few more of these defilers of the noble concept of revolution, just imagine where we'd be today.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, if you point out that if we follow Mr. Stone, he wants us to vote for Obama.
I mean,
it's hard really for it. I don't know how he gets the word revolution out of his mouth quite. You know, it must kind of fall off his lower lip. It doesn't have big resonance. And you take up the issue of Noam Chomsky. Now, Noam Chomsky is a revered name as a critic of imperialism and colonialism. However, he actually has never found a revolution he liked. I think the phrase you use is that he liked every revolution that failed and hates every revolution that succeeded. I shouldn't use the word hate. We all know that Noam is above hate, but he dislikes.
Yes, well,
mentioned what's her, Rosa Luxemburg.
Yeah, so I mean, his contribution is to first attack Lenin and the Bolshevik Revolution as not a revolution but a counter-revolution. Not sure what he meant by that, because he doesn't like, you know, Lenin, because his approach was based on organization and hierarchy and discipline. But he did like Rosa Luxemburg because, you know, she was renowned for spontaneity.
Yes. He mentioned spirituality, which I found really strange. I didn't realize he used language like that. He said something about the spiritual transformation of people. And I thought, is this Noam Chomsky?
But I thought this is really consistent with the entire theme of this New Statesman edition, which is let's praise the revolutions that failed and mm-hmm. let's condemn the revolutions that succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at, I looked at one historian of the German Revolution, since Chomsky was talking about Rosa Luxemburg, and he said, you know, Rosa Luxemburg was the premier personality of the left in Germany. But one of the problems that she had was she was kind of a romantic and had a poor grasp of reality.
Mm-hmm.
And then he noted that, you know, Rosa Luxemburg and her partner,
Karl Liebknecht.
Karl Liebknecht, that, quote, they were amateurs compared with Lenin.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of interesting that Chomsky, you know, reviles Lenin and yet reveres Rosa Luxemburg.
Mm-hmm.
So when I said, you know, you're not going to find revolution from, or revolution won't be brought to you by Noam Chomsky.
Yes. I want to mention, Stephen, you know, it's interesting. If you look at this on a historical plane, and thank goodness you do, in your article, this is gowans.wordpress.com. Please go to that and read it. It's quite a profound article. When the stirring began with the Fidel phenomena, there was an American writer whose eyes popped open, and his name was C. Wright Mills. And he thought the most important contribution he could make for his fellow Americans was to introduce them to Marxism. So he wrote a book called The Marxist, in which he said, you've been missing something from your lives, and it's time that you know about this. And he put together a bunch of essays. It's kind of an interesting phenomenon. Here we are stirring again, but the first thing everybody's saying, don't do what C. Wright Mills told you. Stay away from that.
Yeah. And that was the end of C. Wright Mills' career, wasn't it?
It was. C. Wright Mills was... Yes, he was denounced by Arthur Schlesinger Jr. and drummed out of the Democratic Party. He was associated with Democrats. Oliver Stone might want to look that up. And incidentally, Arthur Schlesinger himself, in his memoir, talks about how he was the hands-on connection between Kennedy and the counter-revolutionaries at the Bay of Pigs. The man. Well, this has been very enjoyable, Stephen. I think you've made a great contribution. And I think we both agree that Russell Brand has opened a nice subject. But thank goodness that you joined in and said, let's take the man seriously and find out what a revolution actually is.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, thanks for joining us on the Taylor Report.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.
All right. That's Steve Gowans. Gowans out. WordPress.com. And I'll tell you again, 918 Bathurst, the Black Book Affair, this year. And Lennox Hines at 3 o'clock with Norman Otis Richmond. And that's going to be very important. They're going to talk about Assata Shakur and her.
Which date? Mention the date.
The 23rd. Good prompt. Saturday the 23rd would be my best guest. And Terry, thank you very much. Phil Conlon, thank you very much. This is Phil Taylor for the Taylor Report. Hey, write to us, taylor@ciut.fm, and check us out, taylor-report.com. See you.